This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivis. So the traumatic injuries can happen at any time. And in some instances, body parts need to be reconstructed with tissue from other sources. There's something called, which I think, in my opinion, sounds terribly wrong, but it's called spare part surgery. And it's a procedure that scavenges usable tissue from damaged body parts that would otherwise be discarded. Sounds so wrong. But anyway, so how does this procedure restore the function and appearance of mutilated limbs? Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon in the studio with us. Welcome. Happy New Year. How are you today?
Good, Mira. Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Fantastic. You know, what is it? Everything about it, spare part surgery, you know, these words we hate, mutilated limbs, okay. Scavengers, usable tissues. Come on, what is this?
Okay, the story goes back to before I was born. So Dad was telling me over the dinner table the other day, Dad's a doctor. Hi, Dad. Hi, Mom.
There is no reception in Penang, is there?
There is no reception in Penang. No, but they're in Singapore with my brother at the moment.
Okay. And no reception there either.
No, but he likes to have the radio on. Okay. Yo, bro. It's me. What's up? Okay. So Dad was telling me about when I was a boy. Mm-hmm. And he was recounting how when he was a boy, there was a patient who came in with a defect in the cheek. So they had a particular type of cancer, mm-hmm. and that cancer required the cheek to be excised. So basically, you know, no cheek. Well, what do? You then take a piece of tissue from somewhere else, and in this case, it was a piece of tissue from the forearm, which was skin, muscle, and the things that go with it, to close that defect up, which is all well and good, except that the skin of the forearm's hairy. And so the patient then has this sort of patch of skin on his face with hair that's completely different to the rest of his facial hair. So that sort of got me thinking in terms of how has spare parts... So the concept of spare part surgery is not new. You know, we've been moving bits of the body from one part to another part for quite a long time now. It just got me thinking, well, how have things evolved? How have things really changed in terms of how we deal with tissues. So there's a lot of hype about stem cells, and then there is this sort of whole organism thing that I as a surgeon deal with. So I thought to myself, well, what's the intermediate? The intermediate is to try to encourage people to think about the human body in parts. So if someone comes to me with, you know, knee pain, shoulder pain, wrist pain, ankle pain, back pain, whatever pain, my view on it is basically a parts view to say, what are the individual components of this particular machine which may or may not be functioning? So the idea of this concept of spare part surgery is to really put the idea out there that we are made of parts, and certainly the sum of the parts is not as great as the whole, i.e. the whole is far greater than the sum of the parts. But we are made of parts. And in spare part surgery, what we basically look at is we look at those parts and we go, well, what part of this machine is critical? What part of this machine absolutely you cannot do without? Like, you know, so if you have a car with an engine and no steering wheel, well, that's not very helpful. But a car with a steering wheel and no engine is probably a little bit more useful because someone can push the car and you can steer, as opposed to having power and no way to direct it. So the concepts of spare part surgery are not very evident to someone who's untrained. So I'll give you an example. A guy came in a surgical sense, right, in sort of a reconstructive surgical sense. A guy came in with an avulsion injury which is surprisingly common. He works at a construction site and he was wearing a ring. And there was a generator set that was being transported, and the generator set had a little hook on it, and the hook caught on his ring and pulled his finger off. Yeah. It happens surprisingly commonly. So he then comes in with this piece of bone that's sticking out of his hand, like literally the cartoon, you know, sort of four fingers and then one sort of cartoon chicken bone kind of thing sticking mm-hmm. out. And his question was, can you put it back on? I said, you're asking the wrong question. that this is a non-salvageable injury. There's no way we can reattach the part that's lost and give you a functioning finger. We have to look at what can we do with what we've got. So in the concept of spare parts sort of surgery, the idea is to ask, well, what do you really need? For this gentleman, he really needed to get back to work quickly. Mm-hmm. So the imperative for him was not to keep the length of the finger. So the bone as a part was relatively unimportant. It was necessary for him to have tough skin around the area because of the nature of the work that he did. And he needed it to heal relatively quickly in the nature of the circumstances of his occupation. So from the sort of mangled, damaged part, which was filled with sand and cement and mud and debris, the tissue is still there. There's bone, nerve, tendon, artery, joint, cartilage, all that stuff is there. So from that mess, I have to work out, well, what's usable? You know, what's not sort of crushed or smashed beyond repair? And out of which that's usable, how can I best apply it? So there's a lot of craftsmanship involved. There's a lot of art involved. I mean, the science is obviously knowing what the tissue part is, but the art of it is being able to do it on the spot. Because literally, it's a craft product.
And you need to take, you know, a lot of things into consideration. There is no textbook method for you as a surgeon.
Okay, the textbooks only identify principles. And this is one of the reasons why reconstructive surgery is so much fun. You know, spare part surgery is so much fun. Because it really is a very, very high order of surgery. It isn't a cookbook. Step one, step two, step three, just sort of do A, B, C. It is a principle number one, clean the area up. Make sure that there's no dead or devitalized tissue. So we do this thing called a debridement, where we remove non-viable tissue. And non-viable tissue means tissue that's not alive now, nor likely to survive. And that takes a lot of skill. The ability to do that takes a lot of skill and judgment. And then the second step is protect the critical structures. You know, if there's a blood vessel, it has to be covered. If there's a nerve, it has to be covered. If there's a joint, it has to be protected. You know, that's probably the second principle. The third principle is to replace like tissue with like. So where it is you need a hard kind of surface, you replace it with a hard kind of tissue. Where you need a soft kind of surface, you replace it with a soft kind of tissue. And you replace specialized tissues with specialized tissues. So someone may, for example, lose the tip of their finger in an industrial accident and come back and say to me, look, I want a fingernail. You know, I don't want my finger to look short. I want to have a fingernail. We'll selectively take the fingernail part of the tissue away from that part and replant it back in. So it looks a little bit incongruous because you have a short nail with a fingernail, which doesn't really serve much purpose beyond the fact that it's aesthetic, but that's what the patient requires.
So how different is this from what a plastic surgeon would actually do?
Basically, plastic surgeons do the same thing, right? So the skills required for doing spare part surgery is probably plastic, microsurgical.
More aesthetic.
No, not really. You know, if you wanted to say, well, boob jobs are spare part surgery. It's just that, you know, spare parts come off a shelf. A lot of the stem cell work is spare part surgery. It's just that, you know, the parts are made in you. This whole idea with spare part surgery is also the fact that we can now grow things. I'm sure you've seen the little sort of nude mice running around with sort of ears underneath their skin, right? And that's basically a scaffold that we make. We seed the scaffold with cells, we grow a spare part, and then we use it. You know, so the whole idea of spare part surgery is really quite attractive in the sense that you can grow new stuff.
In the laboratory setting?
Yeah, why bother with the laboratory? Why not just use the human body?
Yeah, I mean, usually. But can you engineer human organs in a laboratory?
Yes, yes. Okay, so what have we got? So we've got kidney, which can't be used in people yet.
Bladder, I think.
Bladder, yes. So I was a co-author on a paper where we looked at regenerate bladder. So we took a mouse, cut off some of its bladder, put a scaffold, put some cells on it, and regrew the mouse bladder. And a bladder is quite unique because it has certain unique properties. It has to be able to stretch, it has to be able to shrink down, it has to be able to work as a sort of 3D unit, not just like a plastic bag kind of thing. So that was quite interesting work.
So if you were to you know, use human cells itself, I mean your own cells for spare part surgery, doesn't that take time for you to grow the cells and grow that part? And isn't time of essence because you need to then fix this problem? How do you manage that?
Okay, so the problem's in two parts there, right? The first part is the immediacy, which is what needs to be done straight away. And that part, yes, time is quite critical. But again, you've got certain leeway there, like skin, for example, human skin. If you slice it and dice it really thin, wrap it up correctly, you can keep it in the fridge for 3 or 4 days.
You make it sound like a cooking show. sounded like a line from a cooking show.
There are very many analogies between medicine and cooking. Yes, especially so.
Cut up the skin. Just dice it up.
You have to
throw it in the fridge.
You have to slice it really thin, pack it really carefully, make sure that it's clean, and you can leave it in the fridge for a few days. It'll still live. So basically, you slow the metabolism of the cells down. And then when you reapply them, the cells wake up. Some of them die. Some of them are still alive. But you have good quality functional skin, which is better than a skin graft. So, look, it's the same with brain surgery. You know, if you cool the brain, if you cool the blood down, brain lasts longer in brain surgery because the requirement for the oxygen consumption of the brain at that particular time when it's not available is relatively low. So lots of interesting things that we can do with cells and tissue-based stuff. I guess when the question is, why should people care, right? People should care because although these techniques are available, they're not yet commonplace. And one of the challenges that we have in trying to bring them out is the current structure of healthcare, the way it's structured, which is acute meaning now, episode and over. You know, there's sort of there's no concept beyond that. And that's not necessarily always true for the way we live today. The first patient I operated on this morning is a guy who does martial arts. And he had to stop doing martial arts because he couldn't punch anymore. His hand hurt. He'd seen lots of people and no one could really work out why his hand hurt while he punched. And I looked at him at the start and I couldn't really work out why his hand hurt when he punched either. So then I told him to go back, train, take a video of him punching something and come show me. And, you know, having looked at the video, I thought, ooh, that's pretty savage. No wonder it hurts. Mm-hmm. But the problem that he had in surgery was so, so, so fine that if you didn't know that it was there, you didn't know to look for it, you didn't have specialized skills and expertise in order to be able to see it, you just not pick it. And that was because there's a very, very small part under a tendon which was abnormal because of the way he kept hitting it. And the only way that I knew it was there is because I saw the video of him hitting something, and knowing the parts of the machine, I said, there's no way you can do that to a machine without breaking that particular part, right? So the whole idea of parts is really quite relevant for things that hurt. You know, I like it when patients can come and say, it hurts exactly at this spot in this shape. Because usually by the end of that, I can tell you what anatomic structure is underneath, because I know what structure is under the skin that's shaped like that at that location. And if I don't know, I can always look it up with an ultrasound, or I can just look it up in the textbook. So the idea that, yes, you know, we are a whole, that's lovely. But the concept that we're made out of parts, and that individual parts can dysfunction and then individual parts can be fixed, is very attractive to me as a healthcare provider. And it's also very attractive to me in terms of what I would want for my own health as I don't get younger.
We're discussing spare part surgery. Well, reconstruction, actually. Won't you say? It's reconstructive surgery.
It's reconstructive in all sense of the words, not just at a macro level, but also at sort of a cellular level, at a tissue level, at a functional level. But yeah, we're reconstructive surgery.
Consultant orthopedic surgeon Dr. Rajesh Singh with us. If you have a question, our phone lines are open at 0377 109 000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019 000.
Brave finance managers. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's our Health and Living segment. Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, in for his monthly show. First show in 2016, we're discussing spare parts surgery, scavenging for body parts, actually. More to look at the function, how to restore function of certain parts of the body, the musculoskeletal system, your limbs, you know, that sort of thing. We always think of spare part surgery in aesthetic terms, but there's actually more to it than just, fixing a part for it to look nice.
It's fixing a part, what you want that part to do.
Mm-hmm. Which is most important, actually.
Well, it kind of depends who you are. I do a fair bit of regenerative orthopedics, and when I say to a patient something can be regenerated, there's really two categories that it falls into. One is this should be done to preserve long-term function and to reduce pain, and the other one is you can have it done if you want. You know, so it's like coloring your hair or having, you know, a Botox injection or, you know, have something done to your face. Just decide if you need it done, and if you need it done, it can be done. And that's the thing about healthcare today. It's the fact that it's so far advanced and there's so many things we can do. The question isn't really, can we do them? The question is, should we do them?
And, you know, it comes at a cost. All of this comes at a cost.
Ringgit cost, yes. Opportunity cost, yes. Pain and suffering cost, yes. But, you know, I was having a very interesting discussion with an economist before the Indian economy opened up. And he was saying that it'll be excellent when the Indian economy opens up to the world. This is in the 80s. And I asked him, why is that? He said, imagine having lots and lots and lots of money, but you can't spend it. What's the point? So I think that similarly now, people have lots of access to lots of different things, including resources and education and travel and fulfilling their life wishes and aspirations. And imagine having a need and not being able to fulfill it. So I think that while the technology exists and it comes at a cost, in a free market kind of concept, if you understand what the cost and the benefit is, then you have that opportunity to make that decision. Do I want it or not?
Our insurance company is on board when it comes to this.
Okay, so this is where it gets to be the good, the bad, and the ugly. So the ugly is, people are calling apple seed stem cell treatments, mm-hmm. And, you know, just to clarify, anything you ingest is going to go in your stomach, be broken down into the four basic amino acids, and just be absorbed. All right, that's anything natural. So there's no such thing as an apple stem cell. Sorry, it just does not exist. So that's the ugly. The bad is it seems like a really good idea now, but it's potentially harmful in future. And that's some of the, sheep's placenta. I just can't get my head around that. Why would you want to inject sheep placenta into you? Doesn't sound like such a good idea. Just go get some estrogen hormone and inject that. It'll give you the same effect. But, you know, don't put the sheep placenta in. That's probably the bad. And the good is where we look at regenerative orthopedics. So there's a term called orthobiologics, where we say the biological aspect of orthopedics in the US anyway is probably going to surpass the entire implant market in terms of dollar value in the next decade or so. And the reason is, when you can repair something, you don't need to replace it anymore. So the whole idea that...
And repairing it using your own cells.
Using your own cells and other things required for those cells to function, right? Because if I could sit you back into a womb for 9 months in a nice warm bath and let things regrow, that would be great. But I can't do that. You know, you need to be up and about and doing things. So obviously, you need some mechanical struts and scaffolds and sort of other tips. You need other parts of the machine to supplement the growing part of the machine. And then eventually the growing part of the machine takes over those supplementations. But the whole idea here is that the good is where we use the biology to regrow stuff. And your question to me was, where are insurance companies on this? So I'll recount. I have a patient who has a condition called a patellar tendinopathy. That's where the pain on the front of the knee and he's an athlete. So the diagnosis has been established clearly. There's a lovely article in the American Journal of Sports Medicine from 2013 that shows beyond a shadow of the doubt that this is absolutely the correct treatment. So I submit, and this is for a treatment called platelet-rich plasma into the tendon under ultrasound guidance. So I submit the request to insurance. First, it's rejected. Second round, I submit it with the journal article, randomized double-blind placebo-controlled trial, which is the gold standard, meaning there cannot be a question that it works. And the answer comes back and saying, oh, it's out of your policy. So it's a policy exclusion. So the reason why it's a policy exclusion comes from the bad and the ugly, right? So insurance companies have to protect themselves from the bad and the uglies. And in protecting themselves from the bad and the uglies, unfortunately, they exclude the goods as well. So look, it's a changing landscape. And I think that you really want to be clear what's being done and why it's being done and that it's being done for the right reasons.
And you were talking about components of the machine or the part. Mm. What are they?
Okay, so let's look at the skeletal system in general. You've got skin, and immediately under the skin, you've got this sort of bunch of tissues called the subcutaneous tissues. So if you pick the skin up at the back of your hand, the reason why you can pinch the skin off the back of your hand and still move your fingers is because of this thing called a subcutaneous tissue. Lots of interesting things happen there. Then there are the tendons. The tendons are the things that move parts. Then there is the bone, the joint, the ligaments that bind the joint together, the cartilage, as we all know, on the surface of the joints. And then there's the nerves and the blood vessels that supply them. So all of this exists in an organism, and the state of health of that organism is really important. So one of the things that we do is if somebody injures a nerve called the radial nerve, they get a wrist drop or a finger drop where they can't lift up their wrists and they can't extend their hands. So what we do then is we do a tendon transfer where we take certain tendons from one part of the hand and transfer them for another function. So I have a lovely photo of the patient whom I operated on early in the public hospital system the day after surgery, out in the corridor smoking with his hand that now can cock up so that he can hold a cigarette. Which is just the exact wrong thing to do, because after all that surgical effort, when he smokes, that tendon's just not going to heal. But, you know, he can show me, hey, doc, look, you know, I can cock my hand back and I can hold my cigarette.
So what are, I mean, smoking is one, but what, are there other factors that could, you know, lead to the fact that surgery becomes a failure or you know, outcomes are not as you expect?
Okay, yep. So the first one is non-compliance to instruction, right? So there are some instructions that don't make sense, like, you know, jump around and around for 3 times, cluck like a chicken, right? That probably doesn't make sense. But, you know, use your splint all the time, except when you're having a shower. That's a reasonably straightforward instruction. It's because that part needs to be rested. You know, don't smoke cigarettes. It's because that part needs an adequate blood supply to heal. Oh, you mean you don't have to stop smoking forever, but just for that period of time that it's healing, stop smoking. It'll make a big difference. Following post-operative rehabilitation exercises, because these are mechanical things that we're dealing with. And, you know, this goes all the way for the skeletal system. Motion is the lotion. Said that before, and I'll say it again. Motion is the lotion. So we'll usually give instructions for particular movements that need to be done. Those particular movements and those particular movements only need to be done, and not some other substitute that you think is a good idea, which should probably be done. Which is why a lot of the challenges I have are with doctors, because they go, oh yeah, I don't really have to listen to that instruction. I just make that up as I go along.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Exactly. The average patient's a lot better.
I'm sure. And being married to a doctor makes it even more difficult, don't you think?
MRSDR, yes.
Okay.
not go there.
Will the limb have problems in that? Could there be rejection? Because you're using cells, sometimes you're using... There's a donor part from the body, right? Yeah. So can there be rejection?
Okay. I think this is a very important concept to clarify. Transplant means you take it from somebody else and then you put it on another person. That's a transplant. You can take parts from animals like pig heart valves and cow bones and things like that. Those have been done. In those sorts of situations, infection and rejection are problems. And that's where you hear about people having to take. So, for example, a kidney transplant, right? So a kidney transplant's a true transplant where kidneys taken from individual A, given to individual B. There's issues with compatibility and things like that. But when you talk about spare part surgery and stem cell type stuff and growing the thing for the person, then rejection is not an issue. Because basically you're taking it from the organism as a whole and you're using those parts from that particular organism. So the body recognizes it as, hey, this belongs to me. Cardiac bypass surgery, right? So that's spare part surgery. Because we used to take a blood vessel, which is a vein, from the leg, turn it upside down, and make it function like an artery. That's spare part surgery. So the part of the heart which is repaired was the blood vessel, and the part for the blood vessel came from the leg. Fortunately, we've gotten a lot better now. We don't usually need to take long, big blood vessels from the leg. I mean, you can see them walking around, people walking around with shorts, you can see when they've had this cardiac bypass because they've got a scar that goes all the way from the groin down to the ankle, because that's the blood vessel that they took in those days.
What about the donor site? That needs to be looked after as well.
Yes and no. So the idea of spare parts being that, you know, the thing that you take is kind of spare. Which is spare meaning that it has a function that won't really be missed, you know. So we take nerves. So there's a lovely operation we do to repair nerves, and we take a nerve called the sural nerve, which is on the outside of the leg. And there's a lovely study done at University of Malaya when I was there, which looked at what exactly happens to people after you cut the nerve away. Do they really notice it? And the answer was only when they're wearing slippers, because you can't really feel the outside part of the slipper. And that's it. And after 2 years, it stops bothering them. But, you know, ask yourself the other question. I need a nerve which is 12 centimeters long for this person. Where am I going to get it from? You know, I can try to make a synthetic nerve that doesn't really work as well, or I can take a nerve from this particular person. The best is obviously to take a nerve from that particular person.
A lot of people are, you know, freezing or banking their umbilical cord cells. Could that be useful for possible future spare part surgery?
I think that's a difficult question to answer. We know that it's useful for the blood part of the system, right? So if you have a primary disorder of the blood-making machine, that means that your blood-making machine spoils, then they're very, very good for blood-making machines. And the blood-making machine also makes white blood cells and platelets. So they're very good for that particular machine repair. Are they really good for repairing a joint machine? Not really. Are they really good for repairing tendon machines? Not really. So the answer is, for the intended purpose, they're very good. But just because you have a glue gun doesn't mean you can glue a house together. Mm-hmm. You know, you can glue little decorative bits and pieces together. So the cells have a purpose, and I think that my personal view with that is people are stretching that envelope a little bit far. Some of the applications are working. Some of the applications are not really working. But that's not what that cell was intended for. That particular part was intended to repair the blood machine.
And for post-surgery, post-spare part surgery, is recovery take a long time?
Usually it does, because you need to retrain the part to do the thing that it's supposed to do. So in general, say for example, it kind of depends what type of spare parts you do. So if, say, the example I gave you of the wrist drop and the tendon transfer. So the guy goes, okay, now I want to close my fingers, but actually I'm opening my fingers. I want to pull my wrist down and towards my thumb side, but actually my wrist is going to go up. All right? So it's basically retraining the brain to make an action based on how we've rerouted things. So it does a little bit. That's sort of the functional aspect. The biological aspect is not really, you know, a tendon takes 6 weeks to heal, you know, 3 months till it's solid, bone 4 to 6 weeks, blood vessels couple of weeks, tissues couple of weeks. So that part of it's reasonably straightforward. Okay. So the tissue healing part's reasonably straightforward. The functional recovery and the sort of getting to use it again takes a little bit longer.
Why is that? Because this has to do with the messaging system to the brain. And how is that affected?
Okay, it's actually got to do with the fact that the brain's plastic, right? So it's very interesting. The brain is basically a filtering machine. And our sensors are basically just inputs. So if you wear a glove of a particular description that made your hand longer for a period of time, your brain accepts that that's the size of your hand. It doesn't assume a small hand. It assumes a longer, bigger, different hand. And that's its reality, which is amazing. Because if you think about craft, if you think about how people can do such amazing things with their hands, you know, what amazing crafts they can make, what amazing skill they can put with tools, it's because the brain has basically recognized the tool as an extension of itself. I remember watching a cooking show where somebody was describing a perfect circle, you know, a piece of dough laid flat on a table, and with a cookie cutter, they could cut a exact perfect circle repeatedly. But you know, they've been doing that since they were 12 years old, and they're now 40 years old. So of course, with that amount of practice, that sort of dough cutter is an extension of that person. So that plasticity, so your question to me is, why does it take that long? It takes that long to retrain the brain. And that's actually really a very nice idea for someone who works with their hands. Because I have my favorite set of surgical instruments. I have my favorite ultrasound machine. I have the things that I do with my hand, I have my favorites. And when I have my favorites, things go really quickly. And when I don't have my favorites, things go really slowly.
This is psychology.
No, it isn't. It's actually functional adaptation. It is your brain saying, this is my reality in my interface with the physical world. And that's wonderful, I think.
And I suppose it goes to the extent of, you know, how you feel when you hold it and you know, the size of it and a whole load of things.
No, it's just a part. Don't you get it? It's just a spare part. So that surgical tweezer that I hold is an extension of me because I've held it and done so much with it for so many years. So this idea of spare parts is not just that sort of biological spare parts. It's that extension of us spare part.
And with technology, you know, being used, and eventually, do you think technology will slowly take over, you know, this function of you carrying out spare part surgeries?
I think it'll certainly supplement it. So there's a group that I'm working with now, where we're looking at making slightly more intelligent surgical instruments. So at the moment, there is no interface between my finger and the forceps. There's no interface between my finger and the equipment that I'm using that touches the patient. So we're working on creating an interface that basically sees another set of eyes, you know, another brain that's processing as we go along. So it's certainly very exciting, you know, because there's so much that we just take for granted to actually sort of tease that interaction apart. And try to work out, how do I make this better? Not what else do I do? I do it and it works. But how do I make it better? That's a lot of fun.
Is there anyone who would not be a candidate for spare part surgery?
PPP, piss poor protoplasm. You know, if the part cannot survive being... If the part's barely surviving in its native state, in its native place, it's not going to survive moving.
So you need to get to the hospital as quickly as you can?
No. I mean, like, you know, if the person's very elderly, very debilitated, okay, very medically unwell, you know, that sort of whole organism's not holding together well, then it's probably not such a great idea to be moving parts from it. You know, if the whole organism's holding up rather well, it's just spare parts, you know. So I have this, you know, 42-year-old car that barely chugs along. Taking apart from one, you know, taking parts from one part of the engine and moving it somewhere else is not
going to work.
Not such a good idea.
Not the best idea.
Not the
at
best
all.
Idea.
Okay, so your message: what would you like us to take away from this whole idea of spare part surgery?
When something goes wrong, consider it in terms of parts and try to understand what part of my machine's broken. And so you can then have sort of a reasonable conversation with your healthcare provider that says, okay, help me understand how this machine doesn't work and help me understand how you're going to help me to fix this machine. You know, it's healthcare is not necessarily very complicated. It's just reasonably logical. And if you can think in simple machine analogies, like, you know, A causes B, B moves C, C results in D, then you can work out what needs to be done.
You make it sound so simple.
It is.
Thank you very much for joining us today and have a good year. We'll see you again next month. That was Dr. Rajesh Singh, consultant orthopedic surgeon, on talking to us about spare part surgery on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.